The Bob Murphy Show, episode 53.
There's a tidal wave coming. What you gonna do?
Get ready for another episode of The Bob Murphy Show, the podcast promoting free markets, free minds, and grateful souls. It's your source for commentary and interviews conducted by a Christian and economist. Now here's your host, Bob Murphy.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of The Bob Murphy Show. I'm going to be talking today with Robbie Suave, and we'll talk about that delicious name in a moment. And we're going to be talking about some columns he's written. I was very intrigued by them. And also at the very tail end, he'll mention his new book, Panic Attack, Young Radicals in the Age of Trump. As far as Robbie's formal bio, I'll read you some of this. Robbie Suave is an associate editor at Reason. He enjoys writing about culture, politics, education policy, criminal justice reform, television, and video games. His work has also appeared in the New York Times, the Daily Beast, U.S. News and World Report, the Orange County Register, and the Detroit News. In 2016, Forbes named him to the 30 under 30 list in the category of law and policy. And in 2017, he became a Novak Fellow at the Fund for American Studies. As I read this, I'm just curious, it's a math problem, folks. Find the smallest value of X such that in 2016, Murphy would have been named to the X under X list in the category of economics. Show your work. When you're done with that, come back here and enjoy my discussion with Robbie. Hope you like it. Well, Robbie, welcome to the Bob Murphy Show.
Thank you for having me. Great to talk to you.
So I think the first matter of business, and I think you got a sense that Tom Woods and I, when we were on Contra Crewman, had like a sort of running joke about this, is when we first went up to see how to pronounce your last name. So how, in fact, is it pronounced?
So the answer is Suave.
Okay.
But I don't really care. It's a situation where some members of my family pronounce it differently. It was different in the Italian we came from. And so I don't generally correct people or get bent out of shape about it. However, if you misspell my first name, it's Y, not IE. That's what I get upset about.
Now, is that because, like for me growing up, so, you know, of course I'm Robert and I go by Bob, and just there were a couple guys named who went by Rob in my grade school that I just did not care for. And so that just evoked, is this thing with you, or do you think Robbie with an IE makes you sound like a little kid, or what's the deal there?
I'm trying to keep my young person credentials alive for as long as humanly possible so I can still be weighing in on millennial and Gen Z issues, if you get what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was always Robbie as a kid. And then I went by Rob for a little while, and then I decided Robbie was more unique, so I went back to that.
Your aversion, though, to the IE spelling is just because of, hey, you're spelling the name wrong. It's not that makes you think of some other person that, okay, fair enough.
No, it's totally aesthetic. I don't know why it bugs me.
Okay. And I guess the other obvious question is, if you could choose, would you want to keep your hair or switch to my hair?
I think
that was the answer
I'll
was looking
keep
for.
Mine. No disrespect whatsoever, but.
Okay. Yeah, you definitely have the hair of a Suave, whereas I have the hair of a Murphy. All right. Fair enough. So as I explained to you over email when I asked you to do this, Robbie, was I would like to focus. Just I've been enjoying your columns recently and just thought, okay, at this point, we've got enough here to talk about. So why don't we just go through rapid fire fashion here. So the big one, and tell me from your perspective, is this also like, was this really a significant point in your journalistic career, or is it, you know, oh, this was just one of many things you've done, but you made a splash with the whole Covington kids with the, you know, Native American and the standoff in front of the Washington Monument and that whole story. So can you, first of all, just explain briefly, I took you to be one of the first people that came in and said, no, actually, I just looked at this whole video and I think the way that this has been covered has been totally wrong. Am I right in thinking you were one of the first people to break that aspect of the story?
Yeah, I was the first journalist to have an article pushing back with the benefit of having watched the much longer video footage that had just become available on social media. So I, you know, I had missed kind of the initial round of coverage. I was speaking at a conference and, you know, I saw, oh my God, everybody's really upset about this. So I sat down to write about it. And as I was sitting down to write about it, then I was seeing some people tweeting, you know, nobody had written an article yet, but saying, oh, hey, look, there's actually 2 hours of video footage. So then I said, well, I should probably watch, you know, I should inform myself before I start to pontificate about this.
Why don't I stop you just for a second here, Robbie? Robbie, just on the off chance that some listener doesn't actually know what we're talking about, very briefly,
So in the short clip that was initially available that caused everyone right and left to weigh in and denounce these kids. These were high school kids, Catholic high school students, who were there for the March for Life rally in Washington, D.C., for pro-life advocacy. Some of them were wearing red Make America Red Again hats. So they're there for a conservative political cause. They're at the Lincoln Memorial. And in the short video clip, it appears to show them engaging in racial harassment of a Native American man, a Native American activist. And one kid in particular is really giving this guy is glaring at him. And then he goes, this activist, Nathan Phillips, tells the Post and CNN and the Detroit News, blah, 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 that, you know, that these kids were predators. They were a danger to him, et cetera. When the longer footage shows that there was actually another group here, the Black Hebrew Israelites, who are a sort of black nationalist cult. You can run into them on the streets of D.C. They're crazy people who shout insane, obscene things at everyone, at women, at Jewish people, at gay people. They're crazy people. And they had been harassing the Covington kids for a very long time. The Covington kids, prior to the Native American man appearing, the Covington kids actually behaved rather responsibly, did not engage them very much, and then just kind of started making fun of them. And then were doing some kind of their high school pep rally cheers to kind of drown out the venomous hate coming from the Black Hebrew Israelites. And that was the moment that Nathan Phillips interjected himself into this scene. He marches up to the boys. He goes into their midst. They don't come up to him. And then his entourage starts fighting with Native Americans. The boys who weren't doing anything wrong were the scary group, and then approaching them. So then, of course, the kid who's supposedly staring, you know, he didn't get in his way at all. He says he was trying to defuse the situation, and it squares perfectly with the longer footage. He makes a cut it out gesture to one of his fellow students who is beginning to quarrel. I mean, politely argue with some of the crazy things one of the other Native American activists were saying. So really the whole thing turns on his head. Now, a couple kids, I think, made tomahawk gestures, two or three of them, that I think was insensitive. But for the most part, the kids are very well behaved. They're in a strange situation that they didn't expect to find themselves. And it was complete bad faith what the Native American group did. And that was, and the media pounced on exactly the wrong kind of group in this whole thing. So I was one of the first people to point that out. And yeah, it was my most widely read article I've ever written. So it was a very big article for me.
Now, do you know, Robbie, the thing about that story that I never quite understood was, so like there's teachers and they're out with these kids and they, you know, it was like a school event, right?
Yeah.
And so they're sitting around in Washington, D.C., standing around, I should say. And then there's this group of Black Hebrew Israelites that are shouting like really, you know, pretty bad things at them. You know, they weren't just like, it wasn't mild insults. I mean, it was, you know, whatever, racial epithets and whatever. And why wouldn't I don't get why they didn't just walk away? Like, were they were waiting for a bus or something? Or I don't understand. Yeah, why are they sitting there for so long?
This was the meetup place. You know, this is an entire school group, so it's a lot of kids, and this was the meetup place. So I think you know, the adults. So at first, it was really slow burn. Like, it took a while to sort of reach a mass where people would have been like, okay, maybe this is not a good situation. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. At first, the groups are wide apart from each other. It's over a long period of time that the Black Hebrew Israelites kind of inch their way closer, where it becomes more of a confrontation sort of zone. So I think the adults didn't think they needed to defuse anything. And then it might have been too late by then. You know, I think we can. So if this had not gotten any media coverage at all, so I think it would have been perfectly healthy for when they get back to the school like the next week to have like an assembly and talk about what happened and talk about, you know, how we would behave ourselves next time or what we could have done differently. Like, mm-hmm. it's not that they couldn't have learned from this experience. It was just that there was no cause or need to turn this into a national media episode of horrific public shaming, which is what took place.
So it sounds like you're saying one of the main factors here when we're trying to understand, and I want to distinguish between the initial media coverage and then after the new revelations came to light, because for me, and then, you know, let's defer this discussion for a second here to make the first point. But for me, that it was the people doubling down on it that was so despicable. Because in the initial thing, you know, people seeing it presented a certain way, I can understand. And also, like, how much blame do you think it was that the Native American just went around and told people, either because he was flat out lying or just because, you know, he was in his own world and just was perceiving things differently from how a video camera would have. But he was, you know, he was the one telling reporters what happened when that clearly isn't what happened. So at least for the initial coverage, do you think it was an understandable mistake? Or do you think even right as that thing got going?
I do.
Okay.
No, I do. I mean, this is a problem. This is a hazard for journalists. Uh-huh. You know, what happens when you have a source who is not credible, who tells you things that are not true, either because they're deliberately lying to you, or they're just very, very confused, or they're just genuinely mistaken. Mm-hmm. I mean, that, you know, that happens. Bad news stories get written for good reason, because you thought you had a story and you're just being told something that wasn't true. And then, so how much blame do you share in that? You know, how much, you know, my other biggest story before this story was the Rolling Stone hoax sexual assault story from a couple of years ago, where they wrote about the University of Virginia and there was this horrific gang rape. And that also was a case where they had their star, their witness, the woman telling the story, she made the whole thing up. She was a liar. But in that case, and actually the courts agreed, because Rolling Stone got sued, and I think they were right to lose this case, that Rolling Stone really should have realized that the person was misleading them, or had, you know, they spent weeks and months on the story. And if they had talked to any of a number of people who Jackie had referred to, they would have realized that this guy she was accusing didn't even exist. So that's one extreme case. Yeah, in this case, right, I'm a little bit sympathetic. And they're also, you know, they've been suing many of the media companies. The lawsuit just got dismissed, or one of them did, for, you know, reasons that kind of make sense to me. They weren't suing Nathan Phillips. They were suing, they're suing the secondhand people. You know, if mm-hmm. the person who lied or misrepresented tells the media outlet, you know, is it the media outlet's fault? It's a little dicey. So I mean, I think I agree with you. Essentially, I was much more concerned by the second wave of, well, no, I think we were right. These must be bad kids, right? There's some reason they're bad. Well, let's try to find other reasons they're bad then. And then they're going back to find out that, well, maybe someone somewhere wore blackface to a sports event at this school 6 years ago. So we were right. They're bad kids, even though this was different kids and had nothing to do with what happened. That effort that took place after my article adding the context was what really just frustrated me about what was going on.
But even before we go to that element of it, even in the beginning round, though, I mean, surely the fact that in that iconic photo, the kid was wearing a MAGA hat, I think that had something to do with it. And you know what I mean? Like, if he had been wearing, you know, a Obama Biden hat or whatever, you know, I don't think it would have gotten the same coverage. So, I mean, doesn't that somehow factor into it that, yeah, maybe they were misled and perhaps they honestly believe the story they were telling, but is it, you know, were they duped so easily partly because they wanted to hate that kid?
Well, they're looking for stories that confirm what they already think, which is that Trump supporters are bad people and racist people, and people wearing those hats are bad people and racist people. So they're looking for stories that, you know, confirm the idea. I mean, the media loves and believes the idea that hate crimes are higher than they've ever been and has something to do with Trump being president, even though I think the evidence for hate crimes being higher than they ever have been is not particularly compelling. But, you know, that's a narrative that people, it's difficult to, I have to be careful about characterizing the media broadly entirely as the media, because obviously there's so many different publications and
sure,
there's good and bad people at every publication. But yeah, you know, this is a problem that everyone has. Journalists are not objective. They try to be objective, but they have biases, they have perspectives, they have ideologies, and I think it's important if you're a journalist to work really hard to fight those biases, or if something sounds too good to be true, or just really plays to what you think, you know, you have to consider the other side. You have to think, well, am I just seeing what I want to see? All that stuff. So obviously that was going out the window. You know, when you see this, and obviously some of the reactions weren't even news articles as much as just, you know, people, the journalists, the media, famous people retweeting or tweeting the misleading video and, you know, piling shame onto these people. So those are sentiments that are being expressed that are not even going through like an editing process or something. Everyone is kind of just too quick to react, too quick to jump on the news, whatever it is, in an unhealthy way in some circumstances.
Yeah. So tell me if you agree with this. So I think what happened is, yeah, they pounced cause it looks, I was going to say too good to be true. And it was that here you had, you know, this young punky kid with this MAGA hat on, smirking as the famous word was, at this Native American who was just trying to bring peace to the situation. And then, you know, apparently kids around. And you're right, Robbie. I did, when I looked at that video, I think there were some kids doing the, you know, with the tomahawk.
Yeah.
And, you know, so fine. So that, you know, that's, you know, that I could see how if you went into it thinking these kids were mocking this guy, you know, and were being racist about it. Okay. I could see how you would have seen some footage to confirm that. But like you say, I mean, there were people saying stuff like these kids need to be fed into a wood chipper. And I don't mean like some random guy with three followers. I mean, prominent people were literally, quite explicitly. Now you can say they weren't serious, but they were saying it, you know, matter of factly, like calling for violence upon these kids. And then
And some people on the right, I think, were quick to jump on it because they wanted to distance themselves. They didn't want to get tarred by association. I mean, like National Review wrote a very quick article that actually brought them a lot of embarrassment. And I generally like National Review, and I like a lot of the people who are there. But they were too quick for the other reason, I think. They wanted to be like, no, this does not represent us. This is terrible.
Yeah.
So that can also lead you to air.
Right. So then when you... stories like yours and then other ones, you know, broke, and then people realized, oh, wait a minute, you know, if anything, this is exactly backwards. Then that was such a coup for the, you know, Trump fans that I think the left had to do damage control. And so then that's why, instead of just admitting, okay, yeah, a bunch of us got this wrong, and, you know, in the future we should, you know, be a little bit more careful. Instead, like you say, they tried to just resurrect the story. In other words, they needed to deny this feather in the cap of the Trump fans. And so that's why it was now job number one to go out and find some dirt on these kids, because they had to show, no, we were basically right. So the thing is, even if they had all been, you know, serial killers and they found bodies next week, in their basement, they still would not have justified the original round of stories. But yet for some weird reason, it would have seemed okay. You know, kind of like what if the police shoot a suspect or whatever, and then, you know, the pro cop crowd says, well, let's see, maybe the guy was a drug dealer.
Oh, they got
you
know a parking ticket last year. Yeah. Are you kidding?
So it's the same kind of lot, even though, you know, the police officer who does the aggressive thing couldn't have known that at the time, kind of deal. So likewise here, I think that was part of the mentality. I mean, do you agree with that basic take that that's kind of what was going on? Because this really just became a proxy for we hate Donald Trump.
I agree with it. But it honestly, it surprised me the level of desperation to find something to not to validate the original take, because the original take could not be resurrected, but to say that, well, even if we're wrong about this, these must be bad people. I mean, in addition to the supposed blackface photo, there was, you know, some people were upset because the graduation, the commencement, not the most highly honored student who gives the speech at the end of the year,
the valedictorian,
was a gay student who was going to like bash the school or its religious views and was not allowed to give the speech. Of course, this was at a different Covington school. It wasn't even the same school, but which it, like, just showed the, or then there was another video showing them having some kind of interaction with some young women earlier that day. And it's like an even shorter clip, and you can't, like, it doesn't really show anyone doing anything wrong, but somehow that was like, oh, they were, you know, they were being rude to women, but there was nothing to that either. It was just like, okay. And these are random kids either. These aren't public figures. Mm-hmm. These aren't, you know, they had no media profile whatsoever. These are just teenagers who ended up on a viral video, and you're like looking for a reason to hate them. And that sentiment was so widespread among many corners. It actually did take me by surprise, the level of desire to find a reason to hate these kids.
Yeah, it's just to elaborate on one of those ones, because, yeah, my favorite was, and I can't remember the exact wording of the headline, but there was an article that came out, and it said something like, so this isn't an exact quote, but this is definitely the spirit of something like, Covington School, denies gay valedictorian speaking slot or something like that, you know, a few years ago or back in, you know, 2017 or whatever. And of course, that got a ton of traction. So I retweeted and just said that, you know, the author of this should be ashamed of himself, or these editors should be ashamed of themselves. But actually it was the writer of the article, because even the article's misleading. And I, like, you know, point, I put a screenshot, and because in the art, it said something like early on, like, a school in the Diocese of Covington or something like, so you, you realized that, oh, wait a minute. No, this is not the same school. It's just a different Covington, you know, so the link was totally, but the article was written in such a way that it was technically true statements, but it if you went in thinking it was the same school, it wouldn't jump out at you that you were wrong.
Yeah.
And that was my point. So great, because, you know, I tweeted that to say, at first I was just mad at the editors, but then no, look at it, it's the author of the article who's to blame here. And I even had somebody in the comments like say to me, what are you talking about, Murphy? This is like, in other words, it was, even when I was pointing my finger to it to say, look how misleading this is, it was so misleading. A few people in the comments of my Twitter thing didn't even get it. And then I had to point it out, and they went, oh, I see what you're saying. Like, that's how misleadingly written it was.
And the article about the blackface photo was like, the headline was, well, this won't help Nick Sandman's case, Nick Sandman being the staring kid. This won't help Nick Sandman's case. You know, blackface photo of Covington kid surfaces. And then it's like, and then far down, it's like, well, we're not sure what year this was from, but it was many years ago, probably. But the headline was, this won't help Nick Sandman's case. And I remember thinking, like, you've got to be kidding me.
Right. And even there, I mean, isn't it the deal where, like, they would go, like, they'd paint themselves blue on some games and black on other, you know what I mean? So it wasn't like they just did blackface. It was that they painted themselves different colors. And like you said, there was different kids anyway. And also, there was ones where they were showing kids making the quote white power signs when it was somebody just hit a three and they were holding up three fingers. I mean, it got to the point where I thought maybe it was just right-wing trolls who were just being funny when, but no, I mean, there were enough people where I was like, no, that's definitely a leftist who thinks this really is a white power symbol that these kids are flashing on the basketball court. So, well, what the one element here I want to ask you about, Robbie, though, is, like, did you realize you were sitting on what was going to be the biggest story of your career to date, and we're trying to, like, bang it out, but also, like, double checking and making sure, like, you weren't missing something, like, oh my gosh, this is huge, but let me not get this wrong, 'cause then it'll blow up in my face? Or was it not like that?
It was pretty much like that. When I started watching the extended video footage and realizing how wrong, you know, at first I'm like, oh, well, there's more going on here. And then as I'm watching more of it, I'm figuring out, oh boy, this is really, really, really different. So I realized it was going to be a huge story. I didn't realize it would be the biggest story I've ever written. I knew it was going to be big. And I, you know, this was on the weekend. So I was like, I had to get an editor, you know, to do weekend duty. I'm like, so somebody has to read, you know, what I've written before it goes to print. So I don't make any of the same mistakes other people did. Right. It was a little, and then I was like, I wanted it up as soon as possible because there hadn't been anyone else who'd said this yet. So mm-hmm. it was a lot of what you just described.
Now, obviously don't answer if you're giving away trade secrets or something, but I mean, is it like you had a column that you had to write and so you're saying, okay, for my Monday column, do this, or did you have to email someone and say, we need to run this right away, get someone to proofread it? You get what I'm asking?
Yeah, it's more like, I don't have any, I just write when the spirit moves me. Okay. When something happens that I want to write about it, I write about it then if I'm not busy. So there's no, like, I have a column on a specific day. So it was, this was a Saturday or Sunday, I can't recall, where I had sat down and to weigh in on this controversy, and then had seen the video footage. So then I was like, yeah, email someone and be like, okay, somebody, one of you people who's an editor reason has to read this. So, and they did a great job and really helped tighten it up a little bit. And then it was very worth it.
Okay. Well, now if we switch gears to a different, more recent article you wrote, and this is what I liked is because it was the same sort of thing where you were debunking the popular outrage over something and saying, well, no, actually, if you look at these remarks in context, it's a much more nuanced, at least, or perhaps it's the totally opposite of what you've been taught or led to believe, was these remarks with Ilhan Omar. So the allegation in which I saw floating around was, oh, she said, what was it, saying white men were the most dangerous thing in America, something like that? So can you talk about that controversy?
Yeah, she said, so there was an interview and it was a 40-second clip. And she says, you know, white men are the biggest threat we're facing. And so we should be surveilling and profiling and, you know, it's doing all the sort of kind of Patriot Act stuff that has been done to Muslims. We should do it to white men. And, you know, this outraged people for obvious reason. But actually, there was a cut in the video. And if you watch it more closely, it cuts in between those two statements. And also there were some preceding statements. So she definitely did not say we should do this to white people. What she had been saying was that there's the missing clause was if fear was what was guiding our policies. So the point she was making, what she was saying before that was because she was asked, you know, how would you address conservative arguments that it's right to be afraid of Muslim people because Muslim people cause all this violence and terrorism and death? And she was saying that, well, if we were only basing our policies on who is causing the most violence, then we would be concerned. If that was your standard, then you would be concerned about white people and you would want to do the things to white people we'd be doing to Muslim people. Now, there's still some that can be criticized there. So it is like trivially true that white nationalists are responsible for more domestic extremist incidents in the last few years, but we're talking about like two dozen deaths versus a dozen deaths to Muslims. And obviously there's, as a percentage of white people and Muslim people, there's a lot of white people anyway, but, and also, you know, just murders for non-ideological reasons are astronomically more common. And also this, you know, this means excluding 9/11, where if we include 9/11, then obviously Islamic terrorism is more responsible than white nationalists. So it depends how you cut it. The bigger point, the libertarian point, obviously, is that we should not be surveilling, profiling anyone. And especially because, you know, we're freaked out and we're concentrating on a trivial amount of violence versus the amount of violence out there in society. Those are things I would add to it. But the outrage over her comments was she was criticizing the hypocrisy of the kind of like angering anti-Muslim terrorism people. And I think it's perfectly legitimate to criticize that. And the video was cut specifically to take out the part where that when it becomes evident that what she is doing is calling out that hypocrisy.
Yeah. So the reason I was curious about that one, just for the context here, Robbie, is I had earlier, and I have a podcast episode, folks, I'll link to it if you didn't catch it, where people were saying her remarks had been taken out of context when she said some people did something on 9/11 or, you know, something like that. And they were saying, oh no, she was taken out of context. And I went back and read, and I thought, no, on that one, again, not that she necessarily was praising it or whatever, but I didn't think her remarks were taken out of context on that one, that it did seem like a weird thing. And if you want to say, well, English isn't her first language, okay, fine. But I could see why people flipped out. So on this one, when I saw your headline and your article, I was curious. And I said, all right, let me see if Robbie's right. And I went and I ended up agreeing with you that, yes, that was a critical thing. For, so in case the listeners were missing it, it would be like if a libertarian said, hey, I disagree with pot being illegal. And hey, if you're going to ban a drug because it leads to social problems, then you should ban alcohol. And then imagine if the media, you know, said, ah, a libertarian candidate wants to ban alcohol.
Like exactly.
That would be, yeah.
Exactly. That's a good example. That's exactly it. Yep.
Okay. So I get that. And I do agree there that it was ginned up outrage. I'm just curious, you don't have to name names, but when stuff like that happens, do you think the people who are slicing and dicing those videos, I mean, clearly they're making decisions, so they have to know, by taking out some of this, this video is going to pack more of a punch. And so that's why we're going to do it. Do you think they realize they're changing the meaning, or do you think they're just trying to say, well, I don't want to confuse people, let me just show them exactly how bad she is?
I think, I suspect the person who cut this video was like, I just want to show the outrageous parts. So it was just, you know, those were the two outrageous parts. So they were just cutting everything but that. And obviously that changes the meaning. So my guess is they were just not even thinking about that. They're like, well, it's Ilhan Omar. Everything she says is crazy. This sounds crazy. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to give you the most crazy part. And was not consciously like, oh, I got to make sure I take this part out. I could be wrong. It could have been someone who was totally willful at what they're doing. But,
right.
You know, from knowing how the kind of outrage media works, it's sometimes people not even making decisions at that conscious a level. Like, no, right. This is what we got to say. We got to get this up. We got to get this out here. And we're just cutting to the anger part. So that would be my guess as to how that happened. And you know, it was probably someone who thought everything she was saying was so crazy that it didn't, it was speaking for itself and was not even probably thinking critically about what was actually being said.
Right. And I can imagine somebody who really went through the roof over those remarks would think you and I were quibbling over, you know, silly little trivial nuances.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, did you hear what she said? Kind of thing. It's sort of like
three of law, et cetera.
Yeah. It's sort of like when I hear people say, oh, and Paul Krugman was calling for an alien invasion. What an idiot. And I gently correct them and say, well, no, strictly speaking, he was just saying if people erroneously believed there was an alien invasion and then the government spent a bunch of money, that would help the economy. He wasn't actually. And at that point, they're like, Bob, stop defending Krugman. What's wrong with you? The guy's a moron, you know?
Right. Right. So, you know, like I testified before Congress on about rising white nationalism and hate crimes, mm-hmm. and Ilhan Omar was not on the panel, but AOC was, and Ayanna Pressley and Rashida Tlaib, and they were, you know, they were asking questions of the so I was kind of the token opposite. I was there to say I don't really think hate crimes are increasing, and mm-hmm. the other people were pushing back. But you know, and they raised some, you know, and I don't agree with these people at all, but they raised some legitimate questions about, you know, why do these incidents get labeled, you know, as terrorism and these incidents don't? You know, what's less terroristic about this shooting than this shooting that was done by a Muslim? That I thought as a libertarian, I think were interesting questions, and we're probably getting at a real double standard. That, you know, does that mean that we need to surveil white people? No, but that's not what they're saying. Sometimes in their language, they are saying things that comes across as like, okay, well, that sounds like you have a little bit of undue or unnecessary maliciousness to an entire race of people. Mm-hmm. But that's the the fun and the difficulty of being like a libertarian in this day and age is going like, well, actually, I kind of think this was right, even though this isn't the tribe I'm being lumped into. And then other times being like, no, this is right. You know, it's I'm somewhere in the middle, oddly, despite having very, non in the middle views, I thought my whole life.
Yeah, it's like when I would write even just economics stuff, dry economics, fiscal policy. During the Obama years, I would have people emailing me saying, oh, I didn't see you, I bet you weren't complaining about the deficit when it was George W. Bush. And I was like, no, actually I was. And I would send them the articles. Like they were so sure that I was only mad at Obama because of his politics and I couldn't actually be against deficit spending per se. Well, I know I got to let you go here in a few minutes, Robbie, but the last one I wanted to cover is your article recently on the, some of this stuff, it's like, it sounds like it's parody, but with the whole Brazilian wax thing. So in case people missed it, can you just very quickly explain what happened and then what your take on it was?
Yeah, there's this insane person in Canada who has sued or who's trying to get the Human Rights Tribunal to obligate a Brazilian wax business, a business that only performs this, this is intimate waxing for women. And this person is a trans person, a trans woman, but someone who still has the genitalia of a male, and is saying you are required to perform this service on me, and is trying to get the Human Rights Council to force this business to do so. It's like a super evolved version of the bake me a cake sort of thing, which just like, it's totally insane. Because even if you think the business owner should have like no rights, the business owner is saying, I can't even perform this on someone who still has male genitalia. That would be like a Brazilian wax rather than a Brazilian wax, which also I thought was funny terminology. But we'll see how the human rights and also the trans person is just truly despicably insane and has an entire allegedly sordid history. I don't want to talk more about it because I haven't been able to verify any of it. But this sounds like a very nasty person. But with this long history of trying to sue businesses out of existence for not affirming their whatever it is. But it'll be an interesting test of the kind of human rights tribunal model that Canada has, where they don't have the same protections we do for free expression, and indeed even our protections are under assault in some places. But it's a pretty horrible case.
So here, let me just gently push back. So this was one where I read your article and I disagreed somewhat with your take. So, and obviously feel free to correct me, but I took you to be saying, these laws against discrimination are well-intentioned, but when you have trolls coming along like this person, that can really screw everything up. So is that number one, is that a fair characterization of what your take was?
I was not saying these laws are fine unless trolls screw them up. I'm also opposed to I don't think they should have to bake the cake. Those people weren't trollish to the same extent, but they were still, okay. Why are you suing this poor man? Just find a different person to bake you a wedding cake, for God's sakes. So, I'm libertarian. I oppose all these laws anyway. No, my point was just that, if you can't imagine, it's not, everyone is not good faith. So if you have this law, that means someone will come and try to abuse it for absolutely insane reasons, or reasons that are more insane than just the kinds of things that normal people are thinking of when they say, well, I support this, so you're not going to have discrimination. I'm against the laws anyway, but I thought this was more a reason perhaps to bring people in who weren't necessarily against them to say, well, maybe I won't like this. Maybe I don't like this law if this allows someone like this to do this.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So you would be against, you think the business owner should have the right to refuse to associate with any customer, period. But your point is, even for somebody who doesn't share that, that view of libertarian property rights, look at the danger here. And I guess part of it, what's going on is my understanding, right, at least some members of the trans community are distancing themselves and saying, like, this person is not one of us. This is like a poster child for the alt-right. This is, what they're telling everyone's worst nightmare of the trans, agenda would be. And so that's, does that line up with your research on this, that that's the way the, you know, standard activists are dealing with this case is to say, no, no, this isn't what, you know, we're after. Yes. And this guy doesn't represent us.
Well, that's what trans people are saying. And there is a difference between just trans people and trans activists.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm a social liberal, so I don't like have beef with trans people. Mm. I want them to make whatever choices they want. The activist community around this issue is militantly, you know, wants to force society to adapt to a new language, to a new way of characterizing people, and assert that any criticism of their tactics, even if you ultimately agree with them, if you criticize their tactics, you are literally causing them violence and death. These activists haven't done some of the things this particular Canadian person is accused of doing, but the kind of crazy, radically anti-speech mindset of trans activists is kind of well represented by this person.
Okay, fair enough. Well, in the last minute or so here, Robbie, I know you have a new book out. Maybe at some point I can have you back on for a longer discussion about that, but do you want to just quickly explain what you cover and, you know, try to entice the listeners to get a copy?
Absolutely. They absolutely should. I talk at great length about a lot of the things we were discussing here. I actually have an entire chapter on trans activism and the sort of anti-speech themes of that kind of activism. But it's called Panic Attack, Young Radicals in the Age of Trump. And it's about the illiberal activism that has taken hold on college campuses and has spread to other sectors of our society. And I would love to talk about with you sometime in the future.
Okay, great. So, folks, all these links for the articles we've covered and plus Robbie's book, Panic Attack, you can go to bobmurphyshow.com/53 to get all those links. And until then, we will see you next time, Robbie. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You've just experienced another episode of The Bob Murphy Show, the podcast promoting free markets, free minds, and grateful souls. For more information and to subscribe to this podcast, visit bobmurphyshow.com.